Hello, I'm Patricia Van Skyke, and I am manager of the Genealogy and Local History Department, and I am here today to interview Thomas Jordan. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Patricia.
Well, Thomas, it's nice to see you again. I first met you about a year ago when you came to the library to attend some African American genealogy classes and an African American history program, and you told me at the time you were a beginner. I think there's a lot that people that are just getting started can hear from you that will be of value, especially you've had such tremendous success. First of all, I know about you that you have born and raised in Cincinnati, but obviously your genealogy is going to take it beyond you. Can you tell us how you got started and what got you started?
Well, in a lot of ways, for the actual hands-on genealogy, what got me started was the death of an aunt. I lost an aunt in 2002, and that my father was one of three children, and this particular aunt was the last of the kids. So she was gone. My grandparents were gone, and how we found out she died because she was reclusive and living here in the city was kind of tough. So that planted a seed that that was one branch of my family that I lost connection with or didn't have any access to. And then about a year ago, we were attending two family reunions on my wife's side and my side of the family. My mother is from Meridian, Mississippi. We went down to Meridian, and I was looking at all the cousins, a lot older than I were, sitting on the porch and wondering, man, they have so much information that I want to get out of them before they pass. And the next month, we were in California at a reunion on my wife's side, and the cousin that was doing the presentation for the reunion really was just dealing with one segment of the family, and my mind got to turning about what about this other portion of the family. And I had known about Ancestry.com through a cousin several years ago, and I kind of got back home, started putting information on Ancestry.com, and that's kind of how this all started.
So sounds like that your family with family reunions, that's been a value in your family to get together and all of that.
But very much so.
Obviously you had the experience that many people have as you see this family history sort of slipping through your fingertips.
Yes.
Sometimes you're too late and you think, boy, I better get started here and make sure that I track other things down.
Right.
So you mentioned that you had used the internet to find some information.
Yes.
Did you find things that were surprising or that you didn't know about
there? I think with Ancestry, the most surprising thing was the availability of information. Like I put in my grandmother's name in a pop-up and put in, you know, cousin's name in a pop-up. And I thought that was kind of just blew my mind. Just seeing the names and knowing some history of my family, putting in their names and seeing it come up on census records was really kind of just mind-blowing. And the year, like 1930, 1920, I thought that was kind of crazy.
Sure. And in a few years, we'll be able to get 1940 information from the census.
Looking forward to that.
When you went to the family reunions, were there people that you talked with that gave you clues and information, stories you didn't already know?
Well, on my wife's side of the family, because I'm doing research not only in my family, but her side of the family, they had always compiled souvenir booklets and documented history and pictures of family. So that was pretty well documented, but the gap was on my mother's side of the family, and I had really not had access to this family up until about 7 years ago. So, but fortunately, as we've talked earlier, my mother's been around, and I've probably have asked her more in the last year about the family than I'd ever had before, and there have been surprising things that she's shared with me.
What was your mother's reaction when you first started digging into this?
Well, to be quite honest with you, and I found out later it was due to another member of my family's resistance to what I was doing, really on my wife's side of the family, that caused her to be alarmed. She got kind of concerned that I was going to get myself in hot water, and she kind of revealed that later. But she was kind of hesitant about digging around, and I you know, find out there's a lot, some families, maybe all families, have this one little skeleton. But she was hesitant, but after I started finding things and sharing them with her, she started turning around asking me what I could find.
Sure, wanting you to keep
family.
Digging further.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, what kind of things did you look at other than, because I see you in the library a lot, so I know that you've used things other than just the internet to do genealogy. What other kind of sources have you used?
Well, fortunately for where I live at, the Family History Center is right around the corner.
Okay.
Really, if I had to walk, walking distance.
Okay.
So that proved to be a valuable resource. The library here especially the city directories.
Okay.
The cemetery and burial records, mm-hmm. and also the fact that death certificates are microfilm here. One of those death certificates happened to be my mother's uncle, who she didn't know what happened to, and all she did was give me a piece of information about where he lived at, and I was able to find his death certificate that he died, I think, 1914 in Lima, Ohio, and I showed her that blew her mind. But that was here at the Cincinnati Library, so the library here has been a valuable resource.
That's so interesting that you say that, because my family is from Lima, Ohio. I don't know if we'd ever discussed that or not. So,
okay.
And death certificates are a wonderful source yes. of information. And that is one place that you will find something that might be different from what the family legend mm-hmm. says, either lost over years, or maybe there's something that they wanted to, you know, protect or say yes. in a more genteel way.
Mm-hmm.
I had an ancestor that died during the period of the influenza in 1918 okay. and 1919, and I had always been told that she died of the influenza and nothing related
right.
to that. It
right.
was just the way that sort of story got juxtaposed with what else was going on at the time. You mentioned city directories.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our listeners may not know what a city directory is. Can you tell me a little bit more about those?
City directory in a roundabout way, it's kind of like a phone book with a little more information. The city directories are directories listing all the people who lived within the city proper, I should say, Cincinnati. So if I, for instance, I had a wife's side of the family of cousins named Neely, and I've been able to track the Neelys and their movements about in the city and actually make sure I had the right Neely. But if you know what their family member's name is and have an idea where they lived at, you can track them down and follow their movements in the city directories, which are located on the shelf here in the library.
I think one thing people like too is that you can also look at who their neighbors are,
yes.
because there's a listing not just by alphabetical name, mm-hmm. but also by street address. And a lot of times, I don't know if you've run into this or not, but those neighbors tend to have some sort of relevance. They might be related in some sort of way, or moved from another city or another state, sort of in groups or
the way
whatever.
Families migrated up here north, a lot of times the neighbors were relatives.
Absolutely.
And I've been able to crack a few things just that way.
One of the things that we say about city directories is it's they're such a great resource in so many ways, but one is that if you're a beginner getting started, they're easy enough to use and you often have relative success right
yes.
away. But yet you see the most experienced professional genealogist coming back to city directories mm-hmm. time and time again. So they're not something that you ever outgrow, so
no,
to speak.
No, always valuable.
Even though they're easy to use. You mentioned that your family, one line of your family is from Meridian, Mississippi.
Yes, ma'am.
What do you know about that story?
My mother came here and settled permanently here in 58 from Meridian, Mississippi. That family maybe even goes back beyond Meridian, goes into a place maybe called Choctaw, Alabama. And that's one of those lines that I'm still working on. But my grandfather had a farm down in Meridian, Mississippi, passed away. He passed away in 1945. And that is one family, section of the family I'm kind of working on in terms of his parents and his grandparents. But that was where my mother was born and raised at, in Meridian, Mississippi.
You mentioned that you're still working on that, and of course, that's the life of a genealogist,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? That things, it never ends.
Yes,
you know,
never,
you find
never.
One clue and it keeps going. Genealogists talk about hitting brick walls,
mm-hmm.
and with African American genealogy, there are more brick walls.
Right.
Or different brick walls. A lot of challenges that come with that. Have you run into any brick walls look like a brick wall?
I want to say right now, because I haven't necessarily exhausted every possible resource in terms of research on these families, that I haven't necessarily run into a brick wall. I'm having a little bit of trouble on my mother's line through my mother's mother. And interestingly enough, I'm getting calls from around the country with the connection on Ancestry that I may have cracked a wall there in terms of my great-grandparents. Where my goal starting off when I sat down to see what I wanted to accomplish was I wanted to positively identify all 16 great-grandparents great-great-grandparents, not only my side, but my wife's side. And so I'm close to accomplishing that goal, especially through my maternal line.
Well, I think one of the things that you said really demonstrates why you've had so much success in the first year, and that is that you considered that you hadn't reached a brick wall because you hadn't exhausted all available resources. And right. I think that really is part of the secret of busting through brick walls, mm-hmm. is that you don't, you might consider them an obstacle, but you don't really consider them a brick wall because there's still other things that you
still
can
avenues I
check. You mentioned that you also have been in touch with other people that are starting to give you information,
yes.
and presumably you're probably giving them information, mm-hmm. which is one of the things that greatly aids people in their research. Beginning genealogist and advanced is to have a network of people that are working on the same thing.
Right.
Just that dissemination of the information. Now, you mentioned that you've shared what you've done with your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had an opportunity to share any of what you've done with other family members?
My mother, I have a cousin who resides in just outside of Atlanta, Alpharetta, Georgia, who is originally from here, but we have the same roots in Roberta, Georgia. Now, this is on my father's side, and she has been a wealth of information over the last several years. Trading emails, phone calls, and I was actually able to make a trip in May to Roberta, Georgia, where my father's from, saw the grave sites of my great-grandparents, my great-great-grandparents. I mean, just the tip. On my wife's side of the family, I've shared information that they didn't know about. I've been able to do presentations on her side of the family. I have a cousin that just left today to visit her sister, my wife's cousin, to visit her sister in Florida, and I sent her with 7 pages of information on their lines. They wanted me to research their father's line. So I'm receiving calls like every other week from cousins I've never met before that may be potential cousins, where I know that we do have a genealogical link. So it's been kind of very interesting.
So you're more popular than ever, right, with your family members.
Yes.
I did want to use one of this as an opportunity to put a plug in for our collection when you mentioned that you had ancestors from Georgia, mm-hmm. is that we have a really outstanding Georgia genealogy collection. And some of the listeners,
yes.
again, may not know that we cover all 50 mm-hmm. states and some foreign countries, and we mm-hmm. deliberately try to build our collection so that it is in sync with the migration patterns.
Yes.
So Meridian,
Mississippi,
Mississippi mm-hmm. and many, many places in Georgia, places in Alabama, we
yes.
have records from there. You mentioned that your original goal was that you wanted to identify all 16 great-grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
How close are you?
I'm about halfway there.
Okay.
I've had the most success on my paternal line, and the maternal line is where it's going to be a little more dicey. My mother's father was considerably older than my grandmother, but my great-grandfather, whose name was Dennis Thomas, may have been born somewhere around 1860. So the farther back in that line, I'm getting into slavery.
Sure.
Which makes the records a little more difficult to access. So that's why it's a little more dicey. But I've had the most success on my maternal line and being able to actually visit Roberta, Georgia, documentation of grave sites. I have cousins that I didn't know existed, still live down there. And it's just been, that was mind-blowing. And my daughter described it as roots. We went down to the house that my great-grandfather had built, second house he built. And these cousins come out on the porch to greet you.
Thomas, you talked about when you went to Roberta, Georgia,
yes.
that was such a, that you got so much out of that mm-hmm. experience. Can you tell us about that?
It was a setup to the trip to Roberta. I found out I had a cousin who was still alive in West Virginia. That's where my grandmother's sister lived at. And just by asking a question of my uncles, whether did he know of anybody that was still alive. Make a long story short, I located him in West Virginia, went to visit him. He just turned 80 last month, and he had something concrete to say about every one of my grandmother's siblings. My grandmother was one of 11 children. He remembered something concrete. He remembered playing with my father as a child in a wagon carrying cotton. And so he told me about Roberta, told me about this church that was named after our family, told me about my great-grandfather coming to get my grandmother's brother when he, my grandmother had a brother that I didn't know of that died in a car accident. He remembers my great-grandfather coming to get the body, taking it back, and he said to, we're at Jordan Cemetery. Jordan, I said, Jordan Family Cemetery. So the turn of the year, this year, I located cousins down in Roberta, and we made a trip in May. And there it was, a Jordan Grove, it was Jordan Grove Baptist Church. Originally it was a Jordan Grove Methodist Church, but it was Jordan Grove Baptist Church, named after our family, because it was donated, sits on land donated by my grandfather and two of his brothers, and also the Jordan Cemetery. Go around the corner, and there it is, relatives. My grandfather, I found out, my great-grandfather was one of three brothers who, between them, owned collectively about 1,000 acres of land down there. And it kind of built up this little community. Roberta sits 23 miles southwest of Macon, and it kind of just built up this little community. And it seemed like nobody really bothered him. And given the times, considering segregation and racism and everything they had to fight through, they just kind of seemed like they built this little community and nobody bothered them and left them alone. And still have relatives who live on the land and the houses and the property that they lived in. It was a school there also across the street. So I thought that was phenomenal. I don't think a lot of my family knows that.
And a lot of people would just be, it sounds like, as you are, just flabbergasted to find all that information. And I think what your story also brings out, just a wonderful point, is that we start out sometimes with genealogy thinking that we're looking for those names, those 16 great-grandparents. Mm-hmm. But what we really discover that we get is the stories and the rich details and filling in the gaps and the understanding of where our family came from.
Yes.
So what starts out as just filling in some names on a chart becomes something much more valuable.
Very much so.
Well, I'm guessing that once you get all of those 16 ancestors established, you won't stop there.
I always hear the question, have you finished that research yet? And I've learned through reading and research and doing this that it, you know, never stops. You're always finding out something new, and that's the joy of it. Always something new I'm finding out.
And earlier today you were telling me about genealogy fever. Can you give a cautionary word or let our listeners know about
that? My sister-in-law tried to tell me that. She said, you know, it can be addicting, but I think, once again, especially their ancestry, the availability, the records, and seeing those names come up, the library here, and not knowing the material that was available here to start it, just, you know, like I said, you know, library, and what I always loved to read to begin with. So that wasn't a problem, but once you get started, you can't stop. And my wife, Tim Pinnock, talked about a genealogical widow. My wife says she thinks she's joined that group.
But she's gaining a lot, too.
She's gaining a lot. Always on her computer, always reading. And I think I've just become more well-rounded as a result of it.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Thomas.
You're welcome.